The following presentation was recorded at the Newbury Buddhist Monastery, Victoria, Australia. Please visit our website at nbm.org.au.
Thank you, Landon, and a good evening to everyone from Newbury Buddhist Monastery. So let us start tonight or this evening with first the homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami. Alright, so I have been requested to answer some questions yesterday and also for today, so I shall continue with answering the questions that were not answered by the other monastics while they were giving some talks. So tonight I'll begin with this one here. That is before we go into meditation. Then the questions that I'm choosing are questions that is related to meditation. So the first one here is question. After my wife's death, it was impossible to sit in meditation, breath and body scan. So does meditation require a stable state of mind? What do you recommend for the period of grief? Okay, so this is the question. I'm not sure whether the questioner is actually listening in, but it is actually for the benefit of all of us that we do contemplate on impermanence, on death, and also on what is not belonging to us. So usually for a person who has just lost someone they really love, of course we do understand that being one not really fully trained in the mind to see the true characteristics of the world, of course there will be a time for grief and a time for healing. So do allow yourself to have time for healing and also to be able to hopefully grasp the meaning of the Buddha's teaching, apply into your life, and hopefully you can get over this period of grief. Now, for anyone who is passing away, whether it's someone who is close to us or someone who is not close to us, right? A lot of times it's someone who is close to us that gives us that suffering and that grief and that pain. And it is actually a very good time for us. As a Buddhist, of course, we are taught that it is a very good time for us to contemplate on the death. Death is death of a loved one or someone close to us or anyone whom we know actually serves as what the Buddhists would call a divine messenger. We have to understand that with birth comes death. No one can avoid that. It's just a matter of time and it's just a matter of how we go. So to contemplate on someone's death is actually a way of understanding the true nature of life. So as mentioned just now, I'm quite sure everybody knows by now that with birth, there will always come death. And it's just a matter of time. So when I was a lay person, our teacher usually asked us to contemplate on impermanence and what they call non-self, because nobody actually belongs to us. It is very difficult to really understand this, that nobody really belongs to us. Not even our body belongs to us, right? And unless we really have gone through the teachings of the Buddha with clear understanding and acceptance, right, it will be a very difficult fact for us to accept in life. Usually for us as a person who has not been really trained to understand the true teachings of Lord Buddha, which is everything is just a phenomena of conditions arising, conditions ceasing, taking some forms. What we call birth, what we call death, is actually just a process of changes taking place. We may think that our loved one has died on us, right? But actually, it is a beginning of birth for them in another destination, depending on the karma. So for us, when we take birth and death as something that is so important for us to celebrate or to mourn, to one who is really trained in the mind to understand the true nature, the true characteristics of nature, one would just accept it. Right? So of course, for most of us who are not fully enlightened, we have, or I wouldn't even say fully enlightened, for those of us who are still on the path to accepting what is the meaning of life, what is the purpose of life, and being attached to the people whom we so-called love, the people who are very close to us, the people who can really share our joys and sufferings in life, of course we do have what we call attachments. So with attachments, as the Buddha has mentioned clearly in the suttas, with attachment, strings, grief, and suffering and pain when we lose them. Okay. So it is a very good time actually for us to really look at the nature of life resulting in death. So as I was saying, when we were a student in the Dhamma class as a lay person, that was about 30 over years ago when I was just a student in the Dhamma class, our teacher used to teach us how to contemplate on impermanence, on death. But of course, tonight, I don't think I want to go into that because for some people, contemplating on impermanence is quite easy, not fearful, but contemplating on death actually can become quite fearful for some people because they are very afraid to lose their loved ones. So even when it comes to contemplation of death, finally, we do contemplate on the death of ourselves. Right? Now, I just want to explain something that I experienced when I was in Thailand on my very first days of the forest lifestyle in a forest in Thailand. There was this occasion when our teacher actually gave us an opportunity to experience something close to death. Well, what we were invited to do was those who are not fearful of going into a very small secluded room where there's a little box that is nailed together like a coffin, but without the cover, of course. Yeah. And we were all requested to see what it's like to lie in the coffin. So it was just a 3 minutes experience, 3 minutes. Okay. There's this little hut that was really way inside the forest, and there's this one of my teacher's disciples is just waiting outside. We know that there's someone waiting outside, but we were told to go into the room with the door closed, and we were told to really climb into the box and lie down there, just as we would if we were dead and lying in a coffin. Okay, so that was the experience we had. Of course, not everybody did dare to go through the experience because it's a bit, what I call, frightening for some people who are afraid to be alone. Yeah. And, let alone to lie in a box called a coffin. Okay. So what actually went through my mind at that time was, if I were to die right now, and if I were to lie in a coffin, just as others who have died before us, were lying in the coffin and will be sent to the crematorium or burial grounds and all that. Now, what actually went through my mind was that, okay, I have lived my life. I have experienced a lot of so-called worldly joys in my life. There was still suffering that I had to go through and all that. I have attachments to my family members. I have attachments to my property, my bank accounts, my whatever possessions, all those things. I was quite attached to those things. But then, of course, when we were given this chance to really lie in a so-called box called a coffin, what went through my mind was that, fine, I'm here, supposed to be dead. What can I take with me? What can we take with us when we are dead? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So that was a very good experience for us to contemplate and experience what it's like to be dead. Okay, of course we didn't die yet, and we know very sure that if we die, no one is going to go with us. Although we know outside there's somebody there trying to give us that courage to go into the room and blind into the coffin all alone. But what if I was really dead? Right? So there's this story about the four wives of a person. I'm not sure whether you have heard about this story, and I'll try to recollect whether I can really remember it well. I haven't told this story for a long, long time. Yeah. So there's this story about a man who's supposed to have four wives, and when he was about to die, right? He was supposed about to die. He was actually hoping that one of the wives would really accompany him. So he asked his first wife. He said, "First wife, my dear first wife, I've been doting on you day and night. I've spent so much time with you. I'm now going to die. Will you be able to go with me when I die? Will you be happy to die with me when I die?" So the first wife said, "Of course, I love you a lot, darling. Of course, you have doted on me. You have done so much for me every day, every night, every morning. Yeah, throughout the day, most of the time, you have done a lot for me, taking good care of me. But so sorry, if you are going to die, I don't think I would go with you. It's not possible for me to die with you." So the man was so disappointed. Oh my goodness, this is the first wife whom I doted on every morning, every day, every day, every afternoon, every night. Every time I'm with this first wife, I've given this first wife so much time and attention, spent so much effort on her, but she's not been with me. Okay, it doesn't matter, I go to my second wife. All right. So again, he asked the same question. "My dear second wife, I have really spent so much time on you, giving you a lot of attention, and I've done everything for you. Would you go with me if I die?" So the second wife thought for a moment, and then he answered, "Oh yes, my dear darling, you have really loved me. You have really doted on me. You have done a lot of things for me. But I really felt that you were doing all those things for me for your own benefit. I don't think I'll go with you when you die." All right. So that's the second wife. Disappointing. My second wife is not going with me when I die. Now, my third wife, right? Again, I have also spent a lot of time and effort and money taking care of my third wife. Everything that I can do for them to make them happy, giving them everything that they ask for. Yeah. So he asked the third wife, "My dear third wife, I've done so much for you, love you so much, hoping that you can be well and happy. But now that I'm going to die, are you willing to die with me?" The third wife actually thought for a while and said, "My dear husband, I know you've done so much for me. I'm really grateful. But when you die, I probably will just walk a little distance with you. I don't think I will be ready to go with you." So that's the third wife. Disappointing. Four wives, three wives refused to go with him. Now my fourth wife. I have rarely paid attention to my fourth wife. I don't think she's happy to go with me. Never mind. I'll give it a go anyway. No harm trying. So he asked the fourth wife, "My dear fourth wife, I know I've been neglecting you. I haven't paid much attention to you. But now that I'm leaving this world, I'm going to die. I really hope that one of you can go with me. The other three wives have already turned me down. What about you? Are you ready to go with me?" To his surprise, the fourth wife said, "Of course, my dear darling, you don't even have to ask. When you die, I will always be there with you." Okay. So of course the husband was very surprised. But then, of course, this is just a simile of what is happening to us in this world. Okay, whether it's women with four husbands or a man with four wives, right? All these are just things that we go through in life. Now, what are they signifying? Who is the first wife? The first wife is our body. The moment we get up from bed in the morning, what do? Look into the mirror, see how beautiful we look or how handsome we are, clean our face, brush our teeth, put it on, whatever. I can't remember, I can't recall what else is being put on the face first thing in the morning to make us look beautiful and all that, make sure we have perfume and all those kind of stuff. But just to make us attractive, taking care of the body, giving it all the kinds of clothing to make it look really appealing to outsiders and all that, make it look attractive and all that. So that's the first wife. When we die, will the first wife go with us? The body will not go with us to the next world or anything. Right? So that's the first wife. The body won't go with us. Right? So the second wife, who's the second wife? The second wife who told the husband, well, you are caring for me because of your own self. Who is the second wife? The second wife is our property, our status, our work, or whatever belongings, all those things, all our possessions and all those things. Why? We pay attention to all those things. Why? Because we want to have a reputation, we have to have a status, we have to be known as somebody special. Yeah. Isn't it true? All of us need to have an identity of some sort, especially a good one, right? So all these things, isn't it true that it is for one's own selfish means that we are paying so much attention to attaining all those kind of achievements? So that's the second one. The third wife, okay, darling, I'll just walk the distance with you, and after that, I'm not going with you. I'm pretty sure you're a guest by now, right? It's our family members and friends, especially our family members, right? Our children, our whoever is inside our family members. We take care of them, give them the best of education, give them the best of everything we have. Generally speaking, this is what most of us would do. Yeah. So when we die, what do? They just make sure that we have a good burial, they go to the crematorium with us or to the burial ground with us, and then after that is bye-bye. Right? So that's walking a little distance with us. And the fourth why, I'm quite sure all of you can guess by now, is our karma. It's our karma. Our karma, whether good or bad, it will follow us to the next destination. So you see, the importance of contemplating on death is so important. What do we really have when we are alive? What do we bring with us when we die? Is there any way to control our life? Is there any way to control our lifespan? No way. That's why the Buddha has taught us to accept that the characteristics of the world is impermanence, and also non-self, meaning nothing belongs to us. There's no way we can control something that we cannot control, something that is impermanent. The Buddha says we cannot say it's mine, I, me, or mine. It doesn't belong to us. And if we can't accept all these facts of impermanence and non-self, then of course we have a lot of suffering. Okay? Now, I'm not saying that it is wrong to grieve when somebody passed away, because we are all not awakened beings. Right, so please give yourself some time to accept the fact that your wife has passed away. Now, if you have been very close to your wife and you have a very good relation with your wife, of course you're going to be very painful to lose someone so close and dear to you. So, in the worry sense, of course, we will not say that this is not wise to be grieving or anything, because this is something that comes naturally because of our untrained mind. Right? So please give yourself time to heal. Now, your question is, you cannot meditate. It was impossible to sit in meditation. So does meditation require a stable state of mind? Yes, I do believe that it is very necessary to have a stable state of mind. When it comes to meditation, you know, we have always been taught, when it comes to meditation, you need to have that, comfort. You need to be happy, joyful with what you have. You need to have that, body health. You need to have some kind of very wholesome feelings and also understanding the state of mind. But at least here, I can see that you do understand a little bit about your state of mind. You say that, you know, you can't sit in meditation. You cannot even do the breath meditation nor body scanning. So it only shows that the mind is actually dwelling in a lot of thoughts or recollection, yeah, about the death of your wife. So what do you recommend for the period of grief? Now, really, I would suggest that if you are able to, please remember the good things that you and your wife have shared. Celebrate the life that you all had together, and then slowly accept that she's no more here with us, because every one of us know that no matter how close we are to anyone, how dear they are to us, one day we just need to leave them. It is part of the First Noble Truth, right? The causes of suffering is part of the First Noble Truth, where we will be departed from someone or any situation that is dear and present to us. So this is the truth that we need to accept. With acceptance, it will help us to heal the pain and the grief. Okay, so please give yourself some time to learn the facts of life through Buddhism. I'm quite sure that if you have asked this question and was listening to those online teachings, I'm quite sure that you have already learned some Buddhist teachings. So this is just a reminder for us to not only listen to the Dhamma, but also to apply it into our daily life, to know that this is facts of life, this is the truth, this is the nature of the world. We just need to accept it. Give us time to accept it, and then the healing will expedite by itself. Okay. Now, as I say, the death, sickness and death, right? Sickness, old age and death are all considered as divine messengers for us to contemplate. And it will help us to accept that whatever happens to another person, right? It may happen to me too. So, yes, do contemplate on impermanence, do contemplate on non-self, do contemplate on death as a divine messenger, okay, and also to be accepting and letting go eventually. Alright, so the period of grief, yes, please think of the good things that you have spent together, and this is the time for us to accept them, to slowly let go, and at the same time also learn to live with good memories. I'm talking with the assumption that you are grieving because you really miss your wife a lot, and that you know, her death has caused you a lot of pain. And I'm hoping that while you are in your grieving period, you can actually think of the good things you have spent together, celebrating the good life that you all had together, and then starting to accept the fact that you now need to live without her presence, without her physical presence, but with her good memories in your mind. I hope it helps. Okay, so this is what we call the meditation, what we call having a what we call a stable state of mind to go into meditation. Right. So even if you want to try to meditate again, I really think that you will be able to if you can actually try to remember that whatever has happened, you can learn how to let go. Because when it comes to meditation, if we want to go into a good meditation, it's a matter of letting go, right? Awakening eventually is a matter of letting go. It's just how much are we able to let go. Slowly, slowly we let go, right? So I hope that the answer tonight gives you some kind of consolation, and also give you some kind of encouragement that it will be possible to sit in meditation if you can really accept the Buddha's teaching, at the same time accept that your wife has left you but may have gone to a very good destination, who knows. So do all you can in her memory, do all the merits, dedication of merits to her while you are able to within your means, right? You don't have to do something very big always, do something very meritorious. Every day we are doing a lot of meritorious deeds without spending any single cent. All these meritorious deeds can be dedicated to her in loving memory of her and wishing her, encouraging her to be born in a good destination. Okay. I mean, as a Buddhist nun, of course, we hope that everyone can be reborn in a destination where you can meet with the Buddha, the and his teachings, and the holy noble disciples, so that we can actually understand more about the meaning and purpose of life, which will end in us practicing to the extent where we ourselves can become enlightened, or what I would prefer to call awakened to the true nature of life, and to stop the suffering of coming back again to be reborn. Okay, now this one question is now taking me up to 1957. I think I'll just take another question. Can you please say what means the wisdom of arising, passing, presence in the Dhamma follower? How does one stop feeling hurt about one's childhood? Okay, I think this question is almost similar to this one. I was feeling lost and stressed, and then I remembered that it is important to reflect on wisdom, and it helped a lot. Is that a good way to practice? The Buddha also said of nirvana that there is no nirvana. Does the Buddha mean that all aspects of duality dissolve into oneness? Okay, this is a very good question, actually, the second part, especially about whether there's nirvana or no nirvana. Okay, I will answer this nirvana thing briefly first, because it's something that needs a lot of explanation for one to really understand the meaning. I'll try my best. I hope I have the meaning correct as far as my understanding goes. Now, the Buddha also said of nirvana that there's no nirvana. Now, most of the time, whatever we are labeling, whatever names you say of any state of mind, all those things are just labels and names. All right. Now, nirvana here, I suppose you mean awakening. Now, what is awakening? We have to really go back into what is the nature of our existence. All right. What is the true nature of our existence? Why are we here? And how are we going into nirvana? Is that another state somewhere else? Or is nirvana here and now with us? Okay, now from my understanding of the Buddha's teaching, nirvana, or what we call awakening, is really awakening to what? Awakening to the stillness of the pure nature, the pure quality of nature. We are all part of nature, right? This is something very, I would say something quite difficult to explain. It's not easy to just explain in a few lines, because it's just by mentioning that we're all just part of nature, a lot of people will be asking, like sometimes I will ask Ajahn, what do you mean by we are part of nature? So that was before I actually listened to more explanation from our teachers. What do you mean we're all part of nature, right? So we are just part of processes of Mother Nature. So what do you mean by that? Then what is nirvana? Is it a place that we go to, or is it just a snap of the finger and we are awakened to the true nature of what our existence is all about? Okay, so this nirvana thing, you are right in saying that, you know, all aspects of duality will dissolve into oneness. Yes, when there's no duality, when you just see things as they are, changes arising, changes what you call causes coming together, causes and condition arising, which form something to happen, causes and conditions ceasing, which actually give rise to another change for it to form. So all these flux of changes and all these things are something that we have to deal with and not give labels to them. It's just fluxes of changes throughout our process of life. Okay, so all these things called nirvana and reality, all these things is just a labeling of changes that takes place, or of impressions in our mental self that takes place. But there's nothing there for us to cling on. Why are we here born again and again and again in this world? It's because we cling on to those impressions in our consciousness, thinking that they are real, right? We are just part of nature. We are not real. Now, this is something which, again, will give rise to a lot of questions in people's mind. What do you mean we're not real? When I hit you, don't you feel pain? When I scold you, don't you feel angry or anything like that? Now, that's mainly because of the what we call the five aggregates of clinging. Five aggregates of clinging. Because we do not understand that a lot of times all this clinging is very unnecessary. It's all the suffering that we cause to ourselves. If we are able to understand the meaning of we are part of nature, where we actually come from, again, I do not know whether I should go into that area of explanation where you know there's a lot of talks about sunyata, emptiness and all those things. But how did we come about? Okay, so we have to go back all the way to that pure still mind. That pure still mind that meditation is all about. How do we go to that state of the pure, clear, bright, still mind? Right? So that is what meditation will lead us to experience that state of stillness. That stillness that is not shaken by anything. Now, why do we have so much suffering? It's because of our clinging to the form, clinging to the feelings, clinging to our perception, clinging to our sankhara. What is that? Oh, there's a virus threat. Sorry. Yeah. And all this kind of clinging that happens within each of us with our untrained mind. Okay. All this clinging gives us so much suffering. Okay. So this is the reason why Nirvana is not another state somewhere else. It's just a moment of realization and we awaken to the true state of what we are. Okay, this is something that I briefly will explain tonight because first and foremost, I don't think my English is that good to really describe all those states of mind that we go through. And the other thing is that it is not really easy for us to just explain without some kind of analogy or something like that, something to show by example. So if there's a chance one day, if I've learned enough from this teacher whom I'm now listening to, I hopefully one day will be able to explain to you what we mean by nirvana, the state of awakening, where there's non-grasping, nothing, yeah, duality and all these things all become the same thing. It's not different. Okay, so our consciousness are like six mirrors, right? We have six consciousness, right? Relating to our six sense bases. So the six sense bases are something like six mirrors, reflecting reflecting like a mirror of what we see, hear, tongue taste, and then body feel, and eye is hear, nose is odor, smelling, and then tongue is tasting, and then body is feeling, and then the mind. So these are the six sense bases, which gives rise to six consciousness, which is reflecting like mirrors, six mirrors. Okay, with all these sense contacts that we have. And because we cling to them. That's why we give ourselves a lot of suffering. All right? Or impressions which you take to be true. Now, you were seeing that, the question was about how you are not able to let go of your past, what's called young days, right? What is that question? I'm not able to stop feeling hurt about one's childhood, okay? And this one is, I'm feeling loss and stress, and I remembered that it's important to reflect on this thing. Now, feeling loss and stress, what is the cause? You have to find out too. Okay, as I say, it's very hard for us to explain something just like that because it's easier for us if we are able to talk to you directly so that we can understand your question more. So this person who says that I cannot stop feeling hurt about one's childhood is the same as what I have just explained. Your childhood, I don't know how old you are now, but you cannot let go of your childhood. Why? Because you're clinging to the memories, you're clinging to the impressions of the mind. You're not able to let go. Okay? Now, The simile of having a mirror and reflection is something like our mind. Okay, when our consciousness is able to act with our sense bases and feelings and all those things, it reflects onto the consciousness, but that is living in the present moment. The present moment, the contact is there, we feel and we perceive all those things. But once that thing is no more there, right, the consciousness should be at the present moment will be clear. But what happened to us is that we cling. We cling to the impression that shouldn't be clung to. And this is the reason why we always give ourselves a lot of suffering. The past, especially the past, right? Many people, I think there was another question about how he was scolded by his mother and he couldn't actually get over it, the hurt and the pain. How does he overcome the mother's scolding? And I think if I remember correctly, the question, written by the questioner, was that he's about 70 years old now. Now, why do we allow all this clinging, all these memories to hurt us right now? The person is no more there, the situation is no more there, the conditions are no more there. Why do we allow all this recollection to keep on hurting us? Why? Can we get out of it by understanding that they are no more there? Conditions with us right now are not the same anymore. Okay, we're not undergoing the same kind of situation. We're not undergoing the same kind of conditions. Why do we always let all these impressions in our mind make us suffer? Why? That's the reason why the Buddha says we should not dwell in the past. We should not dwell in the future because future is all speculation, right? We should dwell in the present moment. And even when I say present moment, it's already past. So there's this very present moment now. The moment you say present moment now is already past. So why do we always allow the past, especially the past, to influence our happiness, to hinder our happiness in life? Why? So the Buddha says, let go, let go. Let go of those clinging. Why are we suffering? Because we are clinging. We're clinging to all these recollections, our memories, all these impressions in our mind which should be let go a long time ago. We are just clinging, clinging, clinging. And that's why we are suffering so much. Okay? So the Buddha's teaching is don't let the past come to hinder you, neither do you let the future come and hinder us. So meditation is all about now, right now, living in the present moment. So how do we live in the present moment? That is the reason why we have objects of what we call meditation. So of course the common one is the breath. Because the breath is something very neutral. It doesn't give rise to emotions when you're having your breath with you. And it's with us as long as we live. Every moment, as long as we live, the breath is with us. So it's very easy to take that as our topic for meditation. Okay? So what is called by meditating in the present moment? Okay, now every time we close our eyes, we are still, we sit in a posture or stand or walk or whatever, a lot of times we are not able to focus on the present moment. Our mind always thinks back to the past or speculates into the future, or it can be having its own inner chatter, chattering with itself. Now, this is what we call our untrained mind. And this is the reason why meditation is so important, to help us let go, let go, let go, without expectation of anything happening. Okay. So having the memories of the past and all these things, please, please let them go. Let them go. You are no more living in that situation anymore. Things have changed. That's why it's good to have impermanence, right? Impermanence allows us to change. It allows conditions to change, right? And then we just flow along with the changes. And when our mind's inclination is always for the positive, there's always the possibility, I would say certainly there will be the possibility of us being inclined towards something that's positive, which gives us more peace and calm in our mind. That's why it's so important for us to be happy, to be peaceful, right, when we are doing meditating. And this is the reason why our teachers always tell us that if you really want to be a good meditator, You have to take care of your morality so that you have no remorse about what you have done, right? So the five hindrances in daily life as well as our meditation is not to be craving for a lot of sense desires, right? All this craving will actually become hindrances to us. It's when we sit down in meditation and then like for some of us, you know, sometimes when we eat something so nice, then when we close our eyes, then we start to think like, oh, that was what I ate today. Oh, so nice. Will I have it tomorrow or something else? All these are craving, little cravings here and there, but of course, we train to let them go. Now, for those of us who have very traumatic experiences in our childhood, in our youth, in our past, or whatever, yes, I know it's very difficult to let go of. It is very difficult to let go of. But we have to give us that kind of assurance that it can be done. With the right understanding, it can be done. Okay, time factor. My goodness. Okay, so for the meditation, I'm hoping that for tonight's meditation it will be shorter. We have up to 8:30 to meditate, and then we have the Q&A. So what I can encourage all of us to do right now is to just sit in a good, comfortable posture. Whether you are sitting on the floor, on the cushion, or on a chair, make sure that you are comfortable, and also having your body posture to be comfortable. That's the only word I can use. Okay. And then also ensuring that you have some quiet environment around you, no disturbance, and slowly I'll go into the guided meditation. All right. So I hope that the explanation of all these answers to your questions can actually help you to learn how to let go and then to go into a better meditative state of mind. Okay, we don't want to expect anything to happen. We are not looking for enlightenment. It will not come when we look for it. Okay, we just want to make sure that at least we have some peace of mind, some comfort, some joy, just sitting here doing nothing, and also trying to train the mind to listen to us by not running away so often. Okay, so please take your posture, sit comfortably. And I'll just go through the routine that I'm normally doing for myself before I go into the breath meditation. Alright. So once you are seated comfortably, taking three deep breaths at your own pace. When you finish your three deep breaths, you may want to do a body scan. For me, usually a body scan is not just going from the top of my head and to the bottom of the sole and reverse upwards. Usually what I would do is to scan my body, and if I have any area where there's any injuries or pain, for whatever reason, I would like to start with some loving kindness on those areas for all the living cells there, which is supporting that area of injury or discomfort, hoping that those areas can be healed. So for anyone who has any discomfort in any part of the body, focus your mind there. And in your own words, mentally, send loving kindness to the living cells there. May all the living cells in that area supporting the tissues or the bones or the organs, whatever, muscles, whatever that is aching or feeling uncomfortable near the living cells there. Be energized. Let the energy channels that is running through our body. May all energy channels be unblocked so that the energy can flow smoothly. To support the living cells. And may the living cells in those areas that need support also receive the oxygen and blood. Warm higher blood vessels. May all blood vessels, big or small, be unblocked. May they also circulate throughout the body, bringing oxygen to nourish all living cells, to help us in the healing. So I give a few moments for you to do that before we move on to the next stage of meditation. Any part of the body which you feel needs that special metta, give it to the living cells there. Positive energy will help. For those who have some kind of sicknesses, you may be able to do that on a daily basis, but for tonight, we just keep it brief. So once we have sent this loving kindness to the body, tonight I will not go into other kind of metta meditation because of time constraint. So we will try to see how you feel now. Are you feeling more comfortable? More at ease? So that you can go into the breath meditation. Is your mind more collected now? Try to drop off all the things that have happened and focus on your breath. I assume that all of you know that you need to close your eyes so that you do not need to pay attention to at least one sense base. Whatever you hear, whatever you feel, whatever you smell, please try to filter them out by focusing on the in and out breath. Doesn't matter whether your breath is long or short, it's okay. Just let it come naturally. do not regulate your breath. Just be with your breath. Flow with it. The in-breath, starting from the nose to the chest to the abdomen. The out-breath, from the abdomen to the chest to the nose. Be with the breath. Do not control the breath. If you find that your mind is wandering off, use your mindfulness. Pull it back to your breath. It's very normal for the untrained mind to have lots of thoughts coming in. Thoughts of the past or the future. Use your mindfulness with clear awareness. Drop it, let it go. Come back to your breath again. Lots of images arises in your mind. Just be aware, let it go. Come back to your breath. Just be aware, the breath going in. Just be aware, be back on your heart. Be with it. Do not control the breath. Be with the breath. Flow with the breath. Be in your heart. We are used to being taught labeling. I would suggest that you drop the labeling and just be aware of what is arising in your mind. Drop it, let it go. Come back to your breath. Be in the present moment with the in and out. I'm just going to keep quiet now so that you can meditate without any interferences. Okay, so 8:30. I'm not sure whether you heard the bell. If you will slowly open your eyes and reflect on how you feel. So please practice meditation regularly. It has to be like food for the mind, a daily affair, no matter how busy it is. Sometimes even when we are tired, sitting in meditation can be very, very re-energizing. So if we have the energy for meditation, good meditation, it can really help us to stay focused and be mindful very easily. So I'm not sure if there's any questions arising.
Thank you very much, Aya. There are no questions at this point, though people may take this opportunity to type in a question if they have one, so we might just wait a moment or two. Is there another question from the list that is about meditation that we could answer in the meantime?
Let's see. This one I answered yesterday. My parents do not practice meditation and are not Buddhists. How can I support them? I've already answered that yesterday. Whether our parents are Buddhists or not, whether they practice meditation or not, yes, we do need to support our parents, yes. As best as conditions allow us to, we must always try our best to support them. Meditating and suffering causes a feeling of enormous dread. What is the best way to prevent this? Meditating on suffering causes a feeling of enormous dread. I'm not sure which topic you're referring to. Personally speaking, if I do know about the causes of suffering, I thought we will be able to deal with my life much better. So it would be good if you can actually, I'm not sure where you're from, but if you can just elaborate on what is that dreadful area that you're experiencing, maybe we can actually help you better. Because understanding the causes of suffering, that is knowing the Four Noble Truths, is that if you're able to read the Four Noble Truths with right understanding, then we probably can really deal with life much better and cope with all the adversities of life, which all of us have to go through, including us monastics. Even the Buddha had to go through a lot of challenges in life, right? So, at least if you are listening in, perhaps you can write in another question to focus more on what is that experience that we are feeling grateful of. Then it is better for us to easier for us to give you an answer. Hopefully we can give you an answer. So question here, well, this one has been answered, I think. So I think these questions here are not really related so much to meditation, although all Dharma does relate to meditation, because how we live our life actually plays a very important part in what kind of meditation we are able to go into. So the what we call pre-preparation of our identity, our morality, and practices of the four Brahma Viharas, understanding teaching on the four noble truths, depending on origination, the three characteristics of the world, the five hindrances, and especially our sense faces in contact with the external factors and giving rise to whatever results. All these things are important truths that we need to understand so that we can go into better meditation and also to be able to live a more peaceful and happy life.
Thank you, Aya. There are no questions online, so I think we can finish up with the sharing of merits.
Okay, thank you all for listening in. I now invite my sister Nance to come and join me in the dedication of merits chant. Then London copy flash the words on the screen. So, Akasha. Okay, so, so we start with three namatasas and then go straight to the akasaka. So whatever goodness we've done today, we would like to share it with all the devas, with all the buddhas, all beings, and sattvas, all beings around us. The buddhas are all the spiritual beings, and sattvas is all sentient beings. Yeah. So if you're ready, let's chant together. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Akasatta chakumatta devanaga mahindika punyantam anumoditva charam rakkantu loka sasanam. Akasatta chakumatta devanaga mahindika punyantam anumoditva charam rakkantu desanam. Akasatta chakumatta devanaga mahittika punyantam anumoditva charam rakkantu mam param. Ditta bhata shamhehi sambhatam punya sambharam sabbe devanumodantu sabha sampati siddhiya. Ditta bhata shamhehi sambhatam punya sambharam sabbe buddha anumodantu sabha sampati siddhiya. Ditta bhata shamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabha sampati siddhiya. Idam bhonyati nam hotu sita hontu nyatayo. Idam bhonyati nam hotu sita hontu nyatayo. Idam bhonyati nam hotu sita hontu nyatayo. Saru, saru, saru. Thank you all, and thanks especially to London and my two sisters, Nans, who are here with me, who has been supporting the technology part of this whole program. Thank you so much. Please stay well and healthy and happy.